Pro Wrestling Obsession Live is back. Got a full house with you tonight. Bear with me. I'm running up and down stairs between my basement and my office trying to get things going tonight, as my new laptop's not being very kind on me as far as answering the phone and stuff. So bear with me. I am the Prophet Rick Craig, as always. I have my panel of experts tonight. Let's give it up for the PWO World Wrestling Trivia Champion and birthday boy himself today, Sean Blitz Forrester. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. Happy 25th birthday to you, buddy.
Thanks, bro.
No problem at all. Also, we have Lord Bowmeister himself, Bo Johnson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine.
And, of course, our resident defender of the country, Ashley Mojo Farmer. How are you, dear?
I'm good. How are you?
No, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. All right. Tonight we've got a very special edition. I said we had a full house. We've got Classic Wrestling Association joining us tonight. We have former ECW star and current CWA champion Jason Knight with us tonight. We have the Rockin' Rebel in the house also as well. And we have the owner of CWA, Joseph Knight, joining us. Gentlemen, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. this is Jason Knight. I'm doing fine, thank you.
Excellent.
Rockin' Rebel over here.
Yep.
Doing awesome, too. What's up, brother?
Yep.
Jason?
This is Joseph.
Hello, hello.
Come on, Joseph. Joseph Knight. And
now,
I'm
for
doing
all the people out there listening, Joseph and Jason are not related. We had to get that out of the way first thing off.
We've known each other for a hell of a long time, though.
You used to actually manage him, didn't you, Joseph, at one time?
Yes, I did. Many moons ago.
Oh, yeah.
Many moons ago. How many moons would that be?
Well over 25.
What would you say, Jason, back in the 90s?
Well, over 25. Over 25, you know, because it's, for me, ECW... Pretty much almost in 2013, it's going to be 20 years my debut in ECW. So that, you know, that's 93, and then, you know, the rest was, 90, maybe 90, 91, so 20, probably 22, 23 years, I would say.
What promotions, Joseph, did you manage Jason in?
Oh, for various ones, including my own. I used to run a small little independent promotions back in New York City. And a couple of little ones. There was a promotion up in the Bronx at the time. There was another one that migrated from the United States to Puerto Rico. So various promotions back and forth.
Excellent. And Rebel, as you as well, you were formerly of ECW back in the olden days too, when it was Eastern Championship Wrestling as well, right?
Yes, I was, and Jason was my manager for a while, too.
Yeah, well, you're the original.
Yes, the original.
Yeah.
You're the original Ayatollah of rock and roll, right?
There you go. And also an original Eastern Championship and, Extreme Championship Wrestling also. So
back in the old glory days of ECW, when it was... I guess the precursor was Tri-State Wrestling, right?
Yeah, I'll go back a little bit of history. Joe Goodhart was the promoter of Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, and Todd Gordon was his financial backer then. And what had happened is, I believe, Todd saw Joe getting a little too strong and a little too powerful, and he pulled the plug on the money there. And that's what sort of went to Joel's downfall, because, you know, he had something going real good there. And after things settled down for a while, Todd got the itch, and he decided he was going to start Eastern Championship Wrestling and went back to a lot of the footsteps that Goodhart went through, and that's how, you know, ECW got started.
A little footnote that I think a lot of the listeners may not be aware of is that you and Jason actually battled each other quite a few times, I guess, over the title then, right?
Yes, we did.
Yes,
we did.
Title. Yeah, we did. We had some
Yeah, TV title. Yes, we did.
Yeah, we had some fun matches, and it was all, you know, all
good times.
All
good
in
time.
Good times. All in good challenge, and you know, good athleticism, and you know, pretty much getting to you know why right now we are deciding to form a faction, because you know I you know truly believe is as wonderful as the ECW was, and I'm you know extremely grateful, and you know I'm sure Chuck you are too, you know. But there's a flip side to that because, you know, nowadays you have a handful of these former ECW superstars and all these different independent shows that invite them as the ECW originals, you know, and this and that, you know, as a faction. Well, those guys are most definitely great at what they do, but, you know, newsflash, they were not the only ECW originals that had talent and so on and so forth. And, you know, there are some of us that were not pushed the way that we should have been pushed. In fact, you know, some of us were held back, and, you know, later on, I know, you know, Rebel, you know, you left the company because you were extremely frustrated at the way things were going and the way that you were treated after being, like I said, the original, you know. You know, I stuck around. I left the company twice, and I came back twice, and you know, hoping that things would get better. And you know, I was put into you know that ridiculous managerial position, you know, which in the beginning I had no problem doing it. You know, I was it was kind of fun, you know. But later on, you know, I wanted to evolve, you know, just a little. I just want to add that you know I was trained old school. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, for in order to become a professional wrestler, you know, and I've always been an athlete, you know. I mean, I studied everything from judo, karate, amateur wrestling, and of course, you know, old school professional wrestling. I can only tell you that whenever I was in the ring, I was always held back, and I was told how to wrestle, or actually how not to wrestle, in order, you know, pretty much, you know, to put over the competition. You know, some of those, some of them were, you know, I mean, absolutely, they didn't have enough athleticism. I have more in my, you know, in my index finger than some of them do. So that was kind of frustrating. And, you know, this is a whole different era right now. And, you know, right now we're calling the shots, and Rebel and I were simply taking over Classic Wrestling Association, and we're gonna, you know, we are gonna be your top guys and everything, and do everything we can to get the promotion over as much as we can. And guess what? Between Chuck and I, you know, what do we have? You know, well over 50 years of experience in professional wrestling, and you know, I'm really, you know, I'm absolutely shooting on this. You know, you don't hear me, you know, with a gimmick voice or anything like that, yelling and screaming. Because this is for real, folks. I mean, this is it. You know, I think that, you know, we have been held back, you know, long enough. In fact, by the very people that we helped get the promotion over and things like that, you know, we would have taken a bullet for ECW. And like I said, once again, I'm extremely grateful on one hand for the opportunity that I had, and extremely disappointed on the other hand for, you know, for guys like the Rebel and I, and you know, Stetson and Hot Body and Donnie Allen and Angel Amoroso and the originals, you know, J.T. Smith, for Tommy Cairo, and all those guys, you know, for what about, remember you had some classic matches with Sal Balomo. You guys were bringing the house down, you know, and what happened with all these originals, you know? I mean, they were just very simply put on a back burner, and then, you know, including the manager, Hunter Hume, you know, that, you know, I actually heard that there was a little bit of heat because, you know, he might have thought that I just came in and waltzed in and took his spot, and, you know, not at all. You know, he was extremely talented, you know, and it was just a matter of, you know, what the bookers wanted. But, you know, I feel extremely disappointed at the way that not only I was treated, but you know, all these people that I've mentioned, and you know, and then some.
Rebel, what's your take on this?
Like I said, I do agree with a lot he says. You know, I mean, the thing with ECW, it was sort of like with the way Tri-State was, is we sort of were given free rein. In the early days, Paul would be like, hey, listen, I want to throw this idea at you. And he let you run with it. You know, he could put gold paint on a piece of crap, and he would sell to the people for $1 million. I mean, it was that good. But like he said, you know, I sort of got a little frustrated there toward the end there. But at the same time, Paul had some heat with me because back in the day when he worked for WCW, they sort of treated him bad and, you know, ran him through the dirt and everything. And Kevin Sullivan was getting the book down there in WCW, and I had worked with his wife, Woman, in Tri-State for a while. And, you know, I helped Carter back and forth, you know, to get her to and from the airport. And he's very grateful. And he said, listen, I'm going to be getting a book, you know. I'd like to bring it down. You know, I can offer you, you know, three shows a week, anywhere between, you know, 1,000 to 1,500. Would you be interested? So I went and approached Paul about it, and right off the bat, he, you know, you can go F, you know, with them, whatever. And I said, listen, I know you got heat with Bischoff and them. I said, I'll stay, Paul, if, you know, you guys can give me more work than what we're working here now, because they didn't want us to do any other independent shows.
Exactly.
Or any other work, except for ECW, but we were only running, you know, maybe three
twice
or four
a month,
times a month.
Remember?
Yeah. Yeah, three or four yeah. times a month at the time. And us guys that were working there, I mean, the phone's ringing off the hook. People want to use this because they're seeing us on, you know, the local TV in Philly, and, you know, they want to use us on their shows and, you know, help draw people in. And Paul and Todd put the kibosh on it. And I just, you know, hey, man, I'm trying to survive. I'm trying to eat, you know. I'm very grateful. I've been here since the beginning. You know, blood, sweat, and tears, you know. Like Jason said, you know, we take a bullet for those guys.
Absolutely.
You know, but at the same time, they wanted to keep everything under wraps. And I decided I left the company because, you know, as soon as I told Paul that I had a better opportunity to go to, you know, he just didn't want to do things with me. And I just left and went with Kevin, you know, and went to WCW for a little bit. But, you know, I mean, it's I can't you know, say anything bad, you know, at the time I was there. Things were great. You know, it was a new beginning. You know, Jason will tell you, you know, 1 month you're there, you walk out to the ring, the crowd's cheering you off the hook. You can come out the very next month, the same people there, you know, they be booing you, telling you you suck worse than your grandmother, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that was, you know, that was the privilege of working in Philly. You know, if you could get yourself over in Philly there at the arena, I guarantee you get yourself anywhere over in the world.
Yeah,
trust me, that was
yeah,
one of the hardest show. Places to get yourself over.
Yeah, well,
you know, people hated
what
Jason.
I think it,
people
what
hated
I think
Jason
of ECW, gentlemen.
He,
oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I said people hated Jason to the point because he'd come out in these nice suits, and, you know, you had these people from South Philly coming in rags or whatever, so they didn't like this clean-cut, built, tan, you know, guy with a little bit of, you know, of knowledge, whatever. So, I mean, it was great. It was some great heat. All he had to do was walk through the curtain. It was great. Just,
yeah.
You know, totally loved it.
It really was great in the beginning, you know, but I feel that with anything, you know, you must evolve. And, you know, it came to a point, you know, like toward the middle of the, like toward the ass end, you know, where I was so frustrated because I was just standing around, you know, and it absolutely made no sense. It absolutely made no sense to put me, you know, with Lance Incredible, when you have Dawn Marie out there, I mean, come on, you know. It's like, you know, having a fifth wheel on a car. You know, I mean, you know, I think they made a wonderful faction as the Impact Players with Dawn Marie, you know. I was absolutely not needed out there, you know. And, you know, constantly promised that, oh, don't worry about it, you know, we're going to do, because, you know, I feel that, you know, it is the business. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, if I can beat up most of the guys that I worked with, right, and had to put over. That really doesn't matter because, you know, I mean, you know, that's like on a personal level, you know. What I'm talking about is at the business level where you do what you're told to do, otherwise the door is there because it is sports entertainment. However, you know, giving, and, you know, getting very little in return after you're so loyal and you'll do anything, you know, work with this one. Here, wear a dress. Take a choke slam. Do this, do that. Put a girl over. You know, I mean, you know, I'm not sorry that I did any of that. You know, I'm only sorry that the rewards that I was promised, you know, they never materialized. And quite frankly, you know, I mean, I left and, you know, there was money owed to me. You know, I mean, money for pay-per-views, money for the, you know, for that, you know, one T-shirt with my, you know, with my likeness on it. And for those two video games, you know, I mean, we were supposed to be paid for all that. So it's very, very, you know, frustrating. So, I mean, you know, I'm absolutely grateful for the opportunity. But, you know, I can't sit here and lie and be a phony and say that, you know, oh, it's all good. Because it's not all good, you know?
When I hear the words ECW, I obviously think of Extreme Championship Wrestling, but I also go back to Eastern Championship Wrestling and the DC Drakes of the world and the Larry Winters and people like that.
Absolutely.
That, you know, tore the house down all the time. Was your beef, guys, with Todd Gordon in Eastern, or are you talking your beef is with Paul in Extreme?
I don't think with Todd at all, you know, with me. I think that, you know, in my opinion, only in my opinion, you know, only because, you know, this is the way that I was treated by Todd. I loved having Todd there, and in my opinion, Todd is one of the most unselfish people in the business, because he really, you know, a lot of the stuff that he did, from what I've seen, he did it for the boys, you know, including, you know, running certain shows that there was absolutely no money to be made, and, you know, still running it, you know, just for the boys to get an extra Saturday or a Sunday, and, you know, and all that. I, you know, in my opinion, you know, Todd was more than okay with me and everything. And, you know, as far as, like, having beef with Paul, the only reason is that, like I said, I will forever be grateful to Paul, you know, for giving me the opportunity. But, you know, I cannot lie to you and say that on the flip side, he didn't hurt me, because he did. You know, he hurt me financially, and he, you know, quite frankly, he hurt my feelings the way that toward the end, the way that he treated me, and the way, you know, when it was the worst time, you know, when my child got sick, and I really needed work, you know, that he, you know, and I wasn't even fired in the right way. At least if I was let out of my contract, I wasn't even let out of my contract. So when I was approached by somebody for WCW, remember at the time, you know, they were taking a lot of the, you know, I mean everybody, remember Big Vito, and, you know, everybody was being, you know, kind of taken from ECW, especially toward the, you know, toward the ass end. You know, I was offered something too, but the only thing was, I was offered work. The only thing was that they wanted in writing that I was let out of my contract, you know. Because, you know, they're not, they don't want any legal trouble because of, you know, one Jason Knight, you know. And I asked to be released, and, you know, I never was. And that hurt me financially as well, you know. And that really hurts because, you know, when you have, you know, when you have a family to support, and especially, you know, when you're at a, you know, in a position with anguish, you know, with, you know, someone in your family not doing well health-wise and all that, And then you were just kind of, you know, put in a situation where you can't even make money. That really is, you know, that I cannot, I don't know if I can forgive that, you know. I really don't know, because I'm very, very hurt and disappointed over that. I mean, you know, I say that publicly.
Chuck, when you mentioned just a moment ago that you had a little falling out with Paul, when you guys were both in Eastern Championship Wrestling and Paul was kind of the underling to Todd Gordon, could you sense the rise in Paul's power and sense a change in direction of the company and all that when you were there, or did it just completely catch you off guard?
No, I mean, I think it was for the better, because when Eddie Gilbert was in there, you know, doing the book, and Gilbert started to make it the Eddie Gilbert show. And we had a guy in there, Glenn Osborne. He used to do, you know, face paint gimmick with Fireball. They took the Fireball away from him, told him to get rid of the face paint, then they end up getting rid of him. And sort of Gilbert wanted, like, the old school kind of guys working there. So he sort of got rid of, you know, some of the, you know, street brawling kind of guys that, you know, came in from Tri-State and stuff like that. And I saw when Paul took over, Paul, you know, I mean, the guy's got a great sense for wrestling financially, you know, He's no better than a five-year-old with a dollar bill in a candy store. but like I said, he was so smart when it came to wrestling. I mean, he knew the guys that could wrestle. You know, he always tried to put Band-Aids on Sandman, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the guy used to wrestle, but then, you know, after a while, he just, you know, tried to cover up. But, you know, guys like me that could wrestle and you know, other people that could wrestle, he wanted those guys to flourish. He made it the whole show. It wasn't just like, you know, the Rock and Rebel show or the Jason Knight show or the Rob Van Dam show or the Tommy Dreamer or the Taz show. You know, it was a whole show. He put together, you know, a combination of all different, you know, wrestling, brawling, comedy and stuff. And, I mean, that was probably the smart thing. I think what it was is I think Todd got sucked in too far and Paul kept, you know, saying, hey, Todd, we need to do this. We need to do that. And, you know, Todd kept dumping money. And when Paul saw that he dumped enough money in and then Todd gave him, you know, half of the company without Paul paying into it, I knew something was going to go down right then and there. You know, you just, you know, knew it right away. It's, you know, Todd did all the legwork, you know, and, you know, Paul gets the, comes in and then gets the money from his father and they do a financial buyout on him, you know what I'm saying, and you know, get him tossed out. And I just thought that was like, you know, the guy just, you know, gave you everything, and then you're just going to do that to him. I just didn't think that was the coolest thing.
Like, the jaws dropped, and
yeah.
All the eyes turned into, like, high beams, you know.
Yeah,
fact,
they
you
couldn't
know what,
believe.
In fact, you know what? You know, speaking of, you know, the late Eddie Gilbert, remember, you know, his very last time that he was there, him and Doug, was Ultra Clash 93. That was it. That's when Paul took over. And it was such a surprise because I do remember Eddie Gilbert just being completely out of sorts. I mean, he was like, woof, like, you know, a ton of bricks fell on him, you know? And
right.
I remember Doug Gilbert came back and he just started destroying tables and chairs with a baseball bat. I remember that really well because I was like, what is, you know, what's wrong with this guy? I mean, I didn't know, you know, it was my first time, you know, that it was Ian Rotten and I versus the Public Enemy, you know, in the first match. And, you know, that was Ultra Clash 93. You were there. And,
yeah.
You know, that was actually Eddie Gilbert, Eddie's last, you know, last day there. And, you know, I remember it very well. You know, and that was like, it was kind of like, you know, talk about a hostile takeover.
Now, when Doug was
Jamie
in that match,
Joseph.
Was he still, in his Dark Patriot gimmick or...
I think so, yeah. I believe so, yeah. But I just remember him coming back and ripping the mask off and everything, and I think it was, you know, whatever was done to his brother. Because I think Eddie just simply walked out of the arena, if I'm not mistaken. He just simply walked out, you know. I just remember, you know, that he looked as if he just saw a ghost, because I think that was, like, dumped on him, you know, all of a sudden. It's like, you know, here's the deal, you know, Paul's in, you were whatever, you know, and I think he just walked out, and I just remember Doug Gilbert coming back, ripping the mask off, and he took a baseball bat and just started smashing tables and chairs. I mean, he was really, really pissed off, and, you know, and I looked, and I looked, like, for cameras, you know, to see if it, you know, if it was like a part of a promo or an angle, because, you know, no one said anything, you know. And, you know, when I saw that, you know, no one's holding any cameras and people are kind of staying out of the way, you know, I was like, wow, he is pissed off at something. And, you know, later on I found out. And then I remember not seeing Eddie Gilbert at all, you know, for the rest of the night, you know. And so, I mean, I quite clearly remember that in Ultra Clash 93. That was my first introduction to ECW.
Yeah, I think Jason hit the nail on the head. You know, Paul had replaced Eddie before because, you know, there was a lot of people that were sort of, you know, screaming and bitching, you know, to Todd, like, hey, you know, Eddie Gilbert's trying to make this into a Memphis North, and, you know, how come, you know, I've been here since day one, and he didn't want to do anything with me. And I think Todd started to see the light because I was working with Sandman at the time, you know, doing the whole angle. We beat Peaches up. We threw ink in her face, you know, ripped her clothes off and everything. And it got real good heat. So he did a whole angle because he tried to cool it off and had me suspended. And all that did was just infuriate the people more because, you know, the people want to see me get my ass kicked, you know, and stuff like that. And I just said, hey, Todd, man, what's going on here? You know, it's like, you know, I'm not the only one bitching about stuff. You know, that's when Drake was out the door already. Larry Winters was on his way out the door, too. I mean, you know, a lot of the original guys were going from Tri-State that came in ECW. And I think finally Todd had had enough. Paul was in his ear. And I think he just gave Eddie the kiss. And Doug knew, you know, he saw the handwriting on the wall. So, like I said, that night, he knew that was his last night there. So what's he going to do? You know, he's just going to, you know, leave everybody with a nice memory of, you know, going postal with a baseball bat, you know, in the back there. So,
yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, you know, that's you know, some of the things that happen and stuff like that. I mean, another thing, too, a lot of people will talk about is when Paul came in and took over, Crockett approached him about starting his own promotion, too.
Yeah, remember that? We did that at Manhattan.
Yeah.
We did that at the Manhattan Center. Remember the
pilot?
Yeah,
Manhattan Center.
Yeah.
And Todd got a little upset about that because he wasn't included, and he got really, really upset about that. So, but I think things calmed down after that for a little bit. But you know, like Jason said, you know, the people that were there to, you know, that gave, you know, everything that they could for Paul. I think, you know, Paul figured, you know, he could use you as long as he want. You're like a wet dish rag. As soon as he rings you out, you know, you're done and stuff like that. And it was a shame that things were like that, and I felt bad for a lot of guys there toward the end because, you know, with Paul being on Vince's payroll and feeding Bruce Pritchard all those angles, he wasn't worried about the company going down the tubes because, you know, he was getting a steady paycheck from, you know, from New York.
Titan.
Yeah, from Titan.
You made an interesting comment a minute ago about, you know, Philadelphia. If you can get over there, you can get over it pretty much with any crowd. I remember seeing an ECW show myself here in Indianapolis, which is where I'm at. That was the night that Awesome dropped the title to Taz before he made the jump ship over to WCW. I remember meeting Tommy Dreamer that evening, and I had rushed home from work in my shirt and tie and dressed up and all that. And you were talking about how Jason got the heat for that. I approached Tommy Dreamer. We were in line getting autographs and stuff at the time. And he looked at me and says, "What in the hell are you doing?" It kind of is reminiscent of that. They just don't respect the people in the suits and ties there. It's a very working class.
Right.
Atmosphere there, so I understand exactly where you're coming from. And the Dreamer
right,
was
I mean,
cool.
Yeah, you know, that's the way it was. You know, it's like you know, guys come ripped shirts, tank tops, shorts, you know, to the building. They weren't come dressed in a tie or anything like that. If they did, people thought they were weird. I mean, that's the way Philly was. You know, I mean, and it's just, you know, it's hard to say. Like I said, the 1 month I wrestle Axel Rotten, and I'm a babyface. The crowd's going crazy for me. And I beat him, so he wants a rematch next month. I walk through the curtain. Same people, like I said, that were cheering for me, were booing me. You know, it's like, wow, man, see how this crowd seems just flip. You know, Eagles lose a game or, you know, the Flyers lose a tight hockey game or something. I mean, you know, and those people, they're ticked. You know, I mean, that's how Philly is. It's
hey, they're the people that threw snowballs at Santa Claus, right?
Yeah, they did. They you know, when Michael Irvin got knocked out on the field, they were cheering for, you know, for the stretcher and all them. You know, it's, you know, it's a rough town and stuff like that. But I always would tell everybody, hey, man, if you can get over in Philly, you can get over anywhere in the world because, you know, it is a rough town. And, you know, for Dreamer, like, they booed his ass for the longest time. I mean, he couldn't get over, you know, to save his life, you know, with the suspenders, you know, and the motorcycle boots, and, you know, they just, you know, kill that son of a bitch, you know, and everything like that, you know, and after taking all those beatings, you know, he finally got the sympathy, and, you know, the crowd really, you know, took a liking to him, but, you know, when he first came in, he looked like that prima donna wrestler, and they just really didn't like him.
I want to give a special shout-out tonight to Robert Gibson, who is celebrating a birthday today.
Yes, yeah, one of my trainers.
You recognize Robert Gibson, don't you?
Yes, I do. He's a good guy. I tell you, him and Ricky taught me so much, and I actually was able to spend some time with Robert down in Puerto Rico there for a little bit too.
That's awesome, Jason. You also had opportunities where you I guess, early, very early in your career, you actually had some WWF matches. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, you know, first by chance during the 80s, like the mid-later part of the 80s, I went to WCW, and I had an opportunity to wrestle there. Was there, you know, I replaced the Cuban Assassin. He had some family issues, and that was like in 88 or something like that, and then I finished off the tour with wrestling Mike Rotundo, and then I was asked if I would stay and do TV shots for them, you know, which was great. And I mean, I had an opportunity to, you know, wrestle like, you know, Ric Flair and, you know, Vader, and I mean, you know, some pretty cool people, Michael Hayes, the Steiners, and, you know, the Undertaker when it was Mean Mark, managed by Paul. You know, then later on, they called me. There was an opportunity for me to go to Canada and, you know, wrestle for the WWF at the time, you know, before they told us all to get out. And they, you know, it was a, you know, went to Canada, and, yeah, I did, you know, I wrestled some. You know, it was, you know, pretty, you know, I did TV and some house shows for them. But, you know, TV was basically, you know, you go and you, you put people over, get beat, and you hope that you might get, you know, a little bit more. So, but, you know, I appreciate it because I think that in order, you know, in my opinion, in order to learn how to get over, you should go through a period of time, you know, kind of being one of the fall guys to get other people over, you know, and then you see exactly how it's done. Because when you work with people like Ric Flair, for instance, you know, you really learn, you know, what it takes in order to get yourself over, and especially by making the other guy look good as well, you know. So it was an opportunity, you know, it was a great opportunity, but, you know, it was nothing, you know, there was no contract involved or anything like that. Just basically, you know, I was more than welcome to work all the TVs, and, you know, I had a great opportunity with some house shows, because the house shows were great because, you know, they paid off the gate, and you know, at the time they were getting quite a few people for these house shows, like Boston Gardens and just, you know, different places. You know, they were actually doing arenas. You know, that's back in the day when, you know, I used to watch the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, pretty much, you know, when I was just breaking in, like 1977, you know, when I first started training for wrestling. And I used to go to places like in New York, the Ridgewood Grove Arena and the Sunnyside Gardens, you know. And, you know, it was a whole different, you know, a whole different thing. There were smaller buildings with several hundred people versus several thousand, you know, so it was a, you know, it was a good opportunity. Like I said, you know, I mean, it was nothing, you know, I wasn't put under a contract or anything like that. But, you know, it was a very, you know, very good, you know, it was a nice way to make good extra money and to travel and to have a good time. And, you know, that kind of got me to the dance with ECW. And then, you know, that, of course, you know, got me to go to Japan numerous times. And so, you know, it's the business can be very, very good when it comes to meeting people, meeting mostly really good people and a few scumbags along the way. But, you know, those, you know, yeah, you know, those we just avoid, and, you know.
We'll get to Joseph Knight here in a minute.
Yeah, you know, that's like, you know, people like that are like,
hey,
a hello, yeah, goodbye. But you meet a lot of really good people, and, you know, some lasting friendships, like, you know, like I said, you know, these two gentlemen that are, you know, with us here today, along with me, I mean, we've known each other for, like I said, you know, 20 years plus. So, you know, nothing ever changed, you know, never had a bad word to say about one another. And, you know, I think that's, you know, I think that's very important. And that's why,
quick question for you, Jason, if I could, real quick,
yeah,
before,
please,
I forget about it.
Yeah,
our PWO World Trivia Wrestling Trivia Champion, Sean, the Birthday Boy Blitz Forcer, is on the line with us. And I'm sure he would love, due to the fact that Vader is his favorite wrestler of all time,
right.
to know what it's like to be in the ring with Vader.
It was great. I mean, he was so talented. And, you know, that was I was his first television match, you know. So, you know, that's when he had the gear, you know, that, you know,
the mask.
The mask with the smoke and all that, you know. And he was, like, probably under 300 pounds at the time, you know, and still really, really, I mean, he came out of Japan, and, you know, I mean, he was always a heavy hitter, you know, and one thing about him is extremely talented, you know, he's a heavy hitter, but very, very safe, you know. He will let you know that he's there, you know, but he just has, you know, an incredible amount of talent, and especially at the time, I mean, it was just amazing being out there with, you know, and the whole outfit and, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, I was there, like I said, I was his first TV match, so, you know, he had to get himself over strong. And, you know, that's what we do. That's what we're trained for. And, you know, we go out there, head wrestle, you know, pretty much anybody. You know, you your job is to get somebody over, and, you know, and that's what you do. But I was, you know, probably, I would have to say, he's up there with that guy Mark Calloway, the Undertaker, because he was also one of the most amazing big men that I wrestled, with an incredible amount of talent, you know, that just...
Now, did you know that when you were wrestling him as Mark Callis? Was he already getting to that level?
Yeah, you know, he was just so amazing. I mean, to he was at that level, you know, because he already had a few years of experience. You know, he was at that. You know what it is, you know, he said, in the business, you either have it or you don't, you know. And, there are wrestlers in the business that have a $1 million look, and they've been in the business for, you know, 20 years or more, you know, and they still, you know, their work is worth about 10 cents, you know. And it's all a matter of whether you have it or not. And guys like Vader and guys like Calloway and guys like, you know, like Scott Hall and, you know, guys, you know, they just have it. You know, I mean, that is just the way it is. Some people have it, some people don't. And then you have others, you know, that are like world-class champions, and well, belt-wise, and making all kinds of money and everything. And their work is as bad today as it was 20 or 30 years ago.
The Mil Mascaris of the world?
Huh?
The Mil Mascaris of the world?
Oh, no. I mean, I thought, you know, oh, my God, you know, I mean, I grew up watching that guy. I thought he was very, very, very unique. You are kidding, right? I mean, it was very, very unique. He had a unique, you know.
I've heard from a lot of people who say he's very, very sloppy in the ring and not as good as people think he is. That's just where I'm coming from with that.
Here's the thing. That is because wrestling here in the United States was so much different than, let's say, Mexico. You see, Mexican wrestling, it's pretty much, the spots are amazing. But you can tell that they're spots, because in real life you wouldn't do that, you know. And unfortunately, I have to say unfortunately, and, you know, this is not putting down Mexican wrestlers or anything like that. They're all great. You know, they're on top because they're great, okay? It's just a different style. Unfortunately, real quick, here in the United States, the problem is that it turned into a spot fest. And that is exactly what professional wrestling should not be, because it's not a spot fest. It should not look predetermined. You know, two men need to go in the ring and make it look like, you know, we're talking like, you know, let's say Eddie Graham, Killer Carl Cox, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those were wrestlers. I mean, you know, the guys, Bobby Jaggers and Rhodes and Murdoch and the Funks. I mean, the guys that can just go
Dick
up.
The Bruiser.
Absolutely. Kevin Sullivan, Purple Haze, those guys, you know, that just go up. Bob Roop. They go out there and they wrestle. That's exactly what they do. And you tell a story, and oh my God, you know, if you believe, you know, it's like, wait a minute, you know, I know this, you know, it's a wrestling, but God Almighty, these guys are really, because, you know, those were real men doing real wrestling, you know. And the problem is, you know, with somebody like, let's say, you know, Mil Mascaris or you know, someone of his stature, that in order to wrestle that way, you have to be accustomed to that style, you know. And it's very difficult, you know, when you're not accustomed to this style where every spot is called, well, I'm going to do this. And you know, because, you know, with certain moves that guys like that do, if you're just an inch off to the left or to the right, right, he's going to screw up the move. Because, it had, you know, you have to be precisely, let's say, in the center or to his right or to his left. You know, those are, that's why they call them, you know, high-risk, high-flying moves, you know. And, you know, I mean, is that wrestling? Well, no, it's more like yes and no. Respectfully, yes. However, it is, it's more showmanship, and it's more acrobatics than anything. Would you agree, Chuck?
I was just going to say, you know, it's just like a circus act. You can't be off an inch when
exactly.
it comes to that. You know, when we went to Mexico, you know, us guys, we had to be in six-man tags because it's like a, you know, tackle, drop down, hip toss, two arm drags, backslide, you know, hip toss, you know, plancha, you know, roll back in, you know, small package. I mean, it was like, you know, spot toss. You know, and if you were to get two big men in the ring like that and do that, you know, they'd be dead. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you know they'd be killing each other. And these guys are kicking out of top rope brain busters. I mean, but
I know, yeah.
That's the way it was.
Is that why Sin Cara is having such a difficulty?
If I can chime
I think they
in
built
real
him
quick.
Too much to the point where he's not a big guy, but, you know, for cruiserweight, yeah, he could go somewhere, but he's in the ring with guys that are a whole lot bigger than him, you know, and like I said, Mysterio can only get so far, you know, before, you can't have him keep beating Big Show like he did at the time, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's not believable,
One thing I have to say, and I believe Rebel and Jason will back me up on this, the art of professional wrestling is long gone. It's, you know, the credibility is long gone. You know, back in the old days, you wouldn't see King Kong Bundy, Andre the Giant drop to, you know, the Dynamite Kid. You know, they'll take their hits, but they'll come back and, you know, squash the little guys. And I think, Rick, you and me also, we had a little conversation or exchange of text messages regarding, like, finishers. Whatever happened to finishers? It's like if Jake or Snake Roberts hit you with a DDT, it's over. If Hogan hit you with a leg drop, it's over. Now it's like I'm seeing guys hit each other with, you know, 7 or 8 finishing maneuvers and kicking out at 2. So, my thing,
Let me ask you this, Joseph.
But check this out. You know, I just want to add something. Not even a cover.
Oh, sure.
Go ahead, Rick.
So, Chris Sabin wins the TNA title over a much larger Bully Ray. Is that realistic to you?
I didn't get to see the match itself. Now, don't get me wrong. Chris Sabin is a great worker. He's great for what he does. And if you look at Bully Ray, Bubba Ray, whichever you want to call him, you know, he's a brawler. If this was an actual street fight in the street, there's no way, you know, Bully Ray is going to let a little guy beat him up. And I have my opinion for the belt, why, you know, the belt changed hands, but the point of the matter is, this is professional wrestling. It should be credible. It should be believable. Because I've come across many fans. In fact, we did a show in April. Jason and Rebel both were there. And those were not Smart Mark fans. Those were old school professional wrestling fans who believed every little move there is. When they saw one big guy smash another one, and they saw the smaller guys doing the drop kicks on each other, it was believable. And I make it a habit to sit down with the fans. They don't know who I am. And I ask them questions. Well, what do you think? As a promoter and as an owner, I'm sitting with the fans asking them questions. And they all came to me and they said the same thing. The art of professional wrestling, the entertainment of professional wrestling of the 80s, of the early 90s, is what's missing. There's a lot of things missing. Today, no disrespect to any of the young talent. I mean, I respect a lot of the young talent that I've come across with and I've worked with on our shows. You know, the Fallen Angels are a perfect tag team. They're, you know, great. they're great technicians, great. They do a little great comedy routine, and then they do their thing, Stalin Finesse, Michael Massacre, just to name a few, and Out Promotion. These guys are great workers, and they're good for what they're doing, you know. And they make things believable, and that's what is missing in wrestling today. And I encourage my guys, make it believable. Make it like it used to be when you used to grow up and watch Hulk Hogan on TV or Ric Flair on TV. Make it absolutely entertaining but believable. I think Rebel,
you made a great point there, Joseph. Your point that you just made, and I am 100% behind you, is the art of storytelling is gone. It's
absolutely
just matches of high spot. And it drives me crazy. Jason was saying, people kicking out of five finishing holds. I mean, that never happened.
Somebody hit you with a finishing hold,
you were done.
Yeah, but check this out. Not even a cover at times.
Right.
Sometimes not even a cover. You know, that's the point that I was trying to make. Because it's like, you know, it's almost like you take a diamond, right, and you throw it, you know, among crap. You know, really, because it's like, okay, you know what? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, that's somebody's finish, not even a cover, you know, not even a one, two, you know, it's like pile driver and just walk around like, you know, dog. It's amazing. Psychology, that's the word, and it's gone.
One of the things I got to say that's also missing in professional wrestling today, and it blows my mind every now and then, is nobody knows how to cut a decent promo. There's very few young guys that can cut a promo. And it's the storytelling. It's when you see an individual, let's say, and I hate to be the cranky old traditionalist, you know, but I'm the type of guy that, yes, I am, I know. Going back to the thing of me and Jason being related, if we were related, he's the good-looking older guy, and I'm the chubbiest, smaller guy. but let me interject on this too before anything else. I have to say that I've been with, you know, on the road with Jason back and forth in different shows. Same thing with Rebel. These guys, two guys. Now I shouldn't be saying something that it, you know, kayfabe, because I believe in kayfabe. But, you know, you have these two individuals right now who are so great at what they do, and they tell such stories. They go in the ring. They work 200%. You know, guys, I'm going to kind of test your mind here. Years ago, when I was doing managing, you guys were in Lake Hiawatha doing a show. I forgot. It was the NSWA show. You guys pulled, you know, a fan over, you know, obviously it was a gimmick, you know, you guys pulled a fan over, started beating on them. Fans were like, okay, you know, wow, something, you know, incredible. I'm doing commentating. The first thing I say is, well, what do you know, fan appreciation night.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
The fans, yeah, and the fans got into it. And the fans got into it because it was a mix of, they're seeing a great action. They're getting a little bit of comedy. It's a storytelling scenario. And that's what I encourage with the guys and girls in my promotion. You know, take wrestling to the next step. Take it, you know, just don't be a spot monkey. Don't kick out of a pile driver DDT and a Stone Cold Stunner. You know, there's more to that. You know, with the storytelling aspect of and the promo aspect, I used to enjoy just sitting back watching the interviews with the wrestlers and basically, wow, they're captivating me enough to tune in next week. You know, you saw, you know, Hulk Hogan and basically his whole brother and all this stuff. And, you know, he captivated you. He made you want to watch again the show. Today, you know, you have your John Cena, you know, waving the hand, and I know I'm going to get a lot of heat from John Cena fans. But, you know, there is nothing more to that. It's nothing else that captivates the audience to see more. And I know I don't want to take anybody else's time, but one of the things that I see with TNA is with TNA releasing so many people and they're having issues back and forth, the issues with TNA is they do not push their young stars. They depend on former WWE guys to carry the promotion. You could take a Chris Sabin right now. Put him out there. Put him out in the public. Give him a couple public appearances. Boost his character, and you'll get, and you'll, more people will flock to see this young guy who just beat the odds to become a champion. That's what's missing in professional wrestling. You know, the art of storytelling, the art of pushing the character, and the art of really being more than just a spot monkey.
I'm going a little overtime today with the guys from Classic Wrestling Association, which is completely fine with me. I want to get a couple more questions in. I want to talk to Chuck here real quick. So the Extreme Evolution, what is this all about? What's the mission?
Are you talking to me, boss?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I was just sitting back. Well, you know, just going back to what Jason says, you either have it or you don't in this business. And I think what the problem is with a lot of these young guys, they think wherever they go, they got to do the same exact thing. Where you go to a different town, you know, you have to sort of adapt and ad lib to that situation, because I may be in Philly or I may be in New York and a crowd may love my stuff. I may come to Indianapolis and that crowd could care less who I am. So I'm going to have to adapt to it, you know, turn my persona over to, you know, Mr. I hate Indianapolis, you know, and go from there. And that's, this is what a lot of the guys don't get in this business. You know what I'm saying? They think, okay, let me see. I can do five planches, you know, two superplexes, you know, I'm going to get over with the crowd. Some people really don't care about that. I always tell them the most important thing when you walk into that ring is your ears. Listen to that crowd. You know, the crowd's going to tell you, you know, if you're doing a good job or not. And a lot of these new guys, like I said, and Jason will attest to it too. It's like, you know, they have no clue. And it's like, hey, brother, didn't you hear the crowd? You guys should have took it home like 5 minutes ago. Oh, no, dude, I thought we were doing great, you know. No, brother, I'm telling you, man, you were like the Hindenburg. You were going down pretty quick. You know, by the time you took it home, it was already over, you know. So, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it's a shame. You know, the other point I want to bring up, too, is like Jason said, the guys that didn't get pushed properly back in the old ECW days, where are they at now? They're still working. And the guys that got pushed that don't have the talent, where are they at now? They're actually out of the business. You know.
And I'm similar with the rest of our discussion here tonight with Joseph, who's kind enough to join us as well tonight. Joseph, tell us a little bit about the Classic Wrestling Association. What your goals have been. You know, you've got these two outstanding talents here on the air with us tonight that are, one of them is the champion of the promotion. Rockin' Rebels obviously got a history of excellence as well. Tell us a little bit about
we're
going to
take the promotion over. I'm going to interrupt you.
Right.
Jason and I are going to take the promotion over, and nobody's going to do anything about it. You know, if Magic or, you know, any of those other guys have a problem, they could just, you know, they can come step right up to us, and trust me, you know, it'll be like Monday morning, out goes the trash.
Now, you guys going to try to win the tag team titles too, by the way?
We're going to win every title in there. Even if it's a woman's title, we're going to win it.
I think we're pretty much going to do whatever we decide.
Yeah, whatever we want.
Because that's just the way it is. I mean, and I mean.
So do we have permission for Joseph to talk for a minute, or do we need to just cut him off?
When we're done talking, he can talk.
Okay, fair enough.
It's all good. And you know what? And you know, just, you know, I mean, just to finalize it, and we are doing it not strictly and only for ourselves. We are doing it because we want to see the company succeed, and we know for a fact that this one can, because I think with a combination of all of us working hard and doing exactly what we need to do in order to get it over, and it will. And you know, I just you know, I can't wait for the next show and the one after and the one after. And Chuck, I'm sure you can either. Joseph, you're doing a great job, just, you know, and I think that you should wrap it up, my friend.
I appreciate it, guys. Rick and Peter Gritano, just want to give you guys a rundown of the promotion. There's, even though there's been a lot of great independent promotions, I have run my version of a small independent promotion since 95 to 2000, took some time off. the guys kind of drafted me back. So started redoing the promotion. What Classic Wrestling Association is, it's what is missing in professional wrestling. You know, I want guys and girls to know what it is to be in professional wrestling, how to entertain the fans, what basically to bring, back what's been long missing. You know, right now you're looking on TV, there's only the WWE, and it's basically just whatever it is. They could put two roosters to fight against one another, and everybody will be entertained by it because that's the only thing. Everybody, and I know I'm going to get a lot of heat from this, with TNA, TNA is not the WWE competition. They're just a glorified independent promotion, with TV, okay? My thing is, I want Classic Wrestling Association, the CWA, not to be confused with the Memphis CWA of old. I want our promotion to be the next thing. I'm not looking for we're going to put on little shows here and there, No, I want to take it, do a show. I want to take it to the next level. I want to bring it out to the media. I want to show the public what we're about. I want to bring back the fan interaction. I want to bring back what is missing in professional wrestling, which is the word professional wrestling. Everything's sports entertainment. I want to bring back the baby faces, the heels. I want to bring back the action, the credible promos. That's what CWA is basically all about. It's bringing back basically the classics and presenting it to a young group of fans who never got a chance to see the AWA, WCCW, or the old NWA. And with these two gentlemen, basically running roughshod, and my name also being Knight, there's no controversy there, but that's what I'm looking to present to the audience out there, to the fans, because it's what the fans matter, and in my opinion, I sit down with little groups of fans and before and after a show, and a lot of them will tell you, wow, what's missing today in pro wrestling? What is missing? There's something missing out there, and that's why it's not as big as it used to be in the 80s and 90s. The MMA beats professional wrestling. What is MMA? Just professional wrestling with the dial turned all the way up. So, there you go.
Let me interject real quick with no disrespect to anybody. Joe is absolutely right. I don't know what pay-per-view it was for WWF, but I think they brought the Godfather and a couple of the old school gimmicks back, and I think they got over more than the top stars on the show that night, from what I was told. And I think that's what is missing, like they said, in professional wrestling. The persona, the gimmick, with it, the storytellers, it's
the larger
not
than life
about
characters.
Exactly. It's everybody recognized the Godfather. They knew who he was. That's the thing that's missing with professional wrestling. And like I said, the other thing, like he was saying about TNA, Dixie's a mark to the business. She doesn't understand the concept of wrestling. She's bringing in people who, quote-unquote, she is fans of, and paying these guys top dollar, and they're not reciprocating with their drawing power. Their drawing power is not as good as it was. Don't get me wrong. They got a lot of great talent in there. They're just not using it properly, and there's too many rumblings, of too many things going on, of mismanagement, and this guy's not getting booked right, and then this guy came over from WWF, and now he's with TNA, now he's going to go back to WWE. That to me is a ship that has no commander on it. Nobody's sailing that ship properly. It's just dead in the water. And if that product is ever going to go anywhere, somebody's got to take, the wheel and steer that ship in the right direction. And I think, you know, the people that they have in charge there, you know, they really have no clue what they're doing. I foresee it being another WCW just going right down the tubes. It's a shame, you know, but, you know, with the great talent that they have there, they could use, you know, some better ideas. I think WWE.
Hey, Pritchard's gone. Let's bring in Joe Knight.
There you go. I think the problem with Pritchard was he was, you know, he was the kind of guy who, you know, when he first got hired there, he had a lot of heat. A lot of people didn't like him. And, you know, I think one of the beginnings of the end with him was letting Bobby Roode's contract expire, one of their top stars,
right.
Where, you know, the guy was pissed because, how can he get his visa, you know, renewed if he doesn't get his contract renewed? You know, and like I said, if they let him go too long, I guarantee you Vince would have picked him up. Vince would have picked him up, and I knew Dixie was hot about that. And Al jumped on the bandwagon and said, man, we got to get this guy back on board, you know. He's one of our top guys, you know. He's just a heavyweight champ. What happened, you know? So I think that was the beginning of the end with Bruce. And just the way he treated talent and stuff like that, you know, it's just, to me, I've never liked the guy. He never liked me, and that's why I never got along with, you know, with him. He just, you know, had no respect for a lot of, you know, the guys that are talented. He only...
Yeah, but Chuck, he loves you.
Yeah. I can tell you how much I love him, trust me. You know, he...
Rick, right on your show, I'm going to tell everybody right now, and I'm not the... I was raised old school with Eddie Graham, Kevin Sullivan, Dusty Rhodes, those type of promoters.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to throw in the little Eddie Gilbert here. When I was a rookie, Eddie Gilbert, I bumped into him at a John Arezzi convention. We're talking that far back.
Wow.
Eddie took me under his wing, and I was his little bag boy. You know, I'm not ashamed of it. I learned the business from him and got to see some of the insight. That's when Sean Waltman was coming out as the Lightning Kid from Global.
Yes.
And... let me throw one little thing in there. When Smoky Mountain were first coming out, here's an interesting story. Tim Horner wanted to bring me down because I kind of looked like Sean Waltman. I was the same look, really slim and all that. And they wanted to bring me down. And when I told him I was a manager, and I said, I'm not a wrestler, you know, even though I know how to take the bumps and everything. Oh, we could bring you down as Jim Cornette's little nephew. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's going to go over well. But like I said, I want to do is throw in, if any of the TNA people are listening, I'm not the greatest, you know, promoter booker. I'm not in the high. I've never been in pay-per-views, never been in any of the, you know, big companies behind this office, front office or whatever. But I know business. And I know what is missing. So if TNA, you know, they want to turn their Titanic around, you know, hey, I throw the open challenge out there. Contact me. Bring me up for 3 months. I'm sure the Extreme Evolution team here will probably back me up. And we'll still have the CWA, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So.
CWA, gentlemen, we could talk all freaking night long, but we are running out of time. Maybe I can have you guys back on and we can just devote the whole show to you. How's that?
Anytime you want.
You bring a beer and bought a pizza, we're more than happy to.
Rock on. I appreciate you guys. Jason Knight, thank you so much. Rockin' Rebel, I appreciate it immensely. My buddy Joseph Knight, good luck to your show here. What is it, next week?
August 31st.
No, actually, it's August 31st, summer bag.
31st, okay. August 31st, okay. Good
yep.
luck to you all, and hope to talk to you guys all soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gentlemen,
so much.
God bless. Everybody take
Thank
care.
You, Rick.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank
bye
you,
bye.
Guys. Bye-bye.
Yes.
All right. Very interesting conversations with Jason and Rebel and Joseph. Brandon Craig, are you on the line?
I am indeed.
Indeed. Okay, very good. Because it's about that time that we get on with the World Trivia of Wrestling Championship. Before we begin, I'm going to forego music and stuff for now since we're running out of time tonight. Blitz Forrester, the birthday champion, what words do you have tonight for your challenger, Brandon Craig?
Good luck, my friend. That's all I'm going to say.
And the brand himself, Brandon Craig, what do you have to say to the birthday champion?
Well, I would like to apologize in advance, as I know this will not be an end to a great end to a birthday for you.
Brandon, where is your manager?
You know, I haven't the slightest clue. He should be calling in. I talked to him earlier today, and he assured me that he will be here.
Well, the ding-a-ling was trying to call my personal home phone in the middle of this interview. So if he's trying to give us the crap that he doesn't have the number or whatever, all you do is click on the link, and the number's right in front of your face. So I don't know. We're going to get on without him, guys. Because it's time.
He had a problem connecting earlier.
No, he did.
Right.
Hopefully.
Something about he didn't hear anything. And I told him to take it up with the main host.
Okay. Uh-oh.
What do you mean leaving me out of this topic?
The master, Brian Craig, has arrived. All right, we're ready to go here because it's time for a PWO World Trivia Wrestling Championship of the World match right now between the birthday champion and this challenger. Introducing from Indianapolis, Indiana, being led down the aisle by his manager, the master, Brian Craig. He is the brand, Brandon Craig.
Yeah.
And his opponent is your reigning and defending PWO World Wrestling Trivia Champion, Sean Blitz Forrester.
Boo!
All right, gentlemen, we know the rules. Let's get on with this match, shall we? Question number one. By the way, Blitz, obviously you say Blitz if you know the answer. Brandon, if you'll please kindly say Brand if you know the answer. Whoever says the name first will get the first crack at the question. 10 questions.
Check
whoever
Blitz
has the
for
most
a foreign
right.
Object.
Just hold on with your foreign object. The one with the most correct answers will win the match. However, the champion will retain in case of a tie. We kind of call it a time limit draw around here. All right, question number one. Are we ready, guys?
Yep.
Blitz
I'm ready.
Going down.
Who was Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Rookie of the Year in 1984?
Brandon. I'm going to go with one of the Von Erichs. I'm going to say Mike Von Erich.
Oh, he's out of the gate with a 1-0 lead over the champion.
That's right.
Ooh, that one sent the Blitz back a little bit. Question number two. Wow, I'm impressed. Question number two. Who were the three original members of Father James Mitchell's The Disciples of the New Church in TNA?
Y'all got to know this one.
Three Blitz. Original members.
Blitz. Tempest. Flash.
Yes.
And Malice.
Yes. 1-1. We're tied.
Uh-oh. Come on, ref. Pay attention.
All right. Question number three is the master lingering at ringside, not very happy with the last question. Number three, who was the liaison for WCW who negotiated the talent exchange programs with New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Brand. I'm going to go with Sonny Ono.
No, yes. Mm-hmm. Blitz is in trouble here tonight. The brand is off to a start here, and even I am a little surprised here. 2-1, the brand has taken the lead over the defending birthday champion, Blitz Forrester. We go to question number four. In 1976, who was known for wearing a Conqueror of the Guerreros T-shirt while feuding with the family in Los Angeles?
Blitz
Forrester.
Roddy Piper.
Tied it up 2-2. Blitz and Brandon in a slugfest. Coming out early here in this match as we get to the halfway point of the competition. Who are the two men that the Road Warriors won the NWA six-man tag team championship with?
Brand.
Uh-huh.
To go with
Dusty Rhodes.
Yes.
Nietzsche in Rio.
3-2. The brand has taken the lead over Blitz Forrester here at the halfway point of this match. We've got to take a timeout here. Blitz, you're being blitzed.
All right, so I'm paying attention now.
Now, hang on a second. Blitz Forrester's talking here. Blitz?
Hold on. I think Mojo just said something.
What did
Mojo
say?
Mojo,
he said
repeat yourself, please.
You said
Blitz,
you're being blitzed. You said Blitz, you're being blitzed. And I said, oh, the irony.
Yes, the irony. This is a shocker. Blitz,
more
Forrester,
like
do
agony.
Do you need to put some water on your face or whatever? My nephew
yeah,
has come out on fire.
Yeah, that ain't
going to
cover all that ugly.
All right, let's get on to question number. Blitz Forrester, you're speechless.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Let's get on with
Blitz.
It.
All right, let's go. Question number six. Who has the WWE deemed as having the greatest physique in the history of professional wrestling?
Master.
No.
Crap.
Hey, that's master. Interference. Come on, Russ.
Oh, Mojo's coming out. Uh-oh, they're coming down to Blitz Forrester's corner here. 5 seconds.
Blitz
Forrester.
Ravishing Rick Rude.
That is a 3-3 tie between Blitz Forrester and his challenger, the brand, Brandon Craig. Question number seven. Iceman Parsons was involved in a racial feud with which wrestler in the UWF?
Brand. Colonel D. Beaters.
That is correct. The brand has taken the lead.
Way to go,
taken
bud.
The lead.
Way to go.
2-3. The master has been working with him all week here for this match. I'm totally shocked here, standing in disbelief over here as we get to question number eight, and the champion is down by one.
He's in top physical shape, as you can see.
I guess so.
I've been eating my breakfast.
Number eight, debuting as the storyline cousin of Barry and Kendall Windham, which wrestler debuted in the GWF as Johnny Hawk?
Oh, goodness.
Blitz Forrester.
That was John Bradshaw Layfield.
That is the correct answer, and we have a 4-4 tie.
Wait, that was JBL?
That was JBL. Two questions left. Who were the first tag team to hold the WCW World and United States Tag Team Championships simultaneously?
Brandon.
I'm
going to go with one of my personal favorites, the Midnight Express.
That is correct. Brandon has just taken a 5-4 lead with one question left in the evening here.
Been going back and forth.
Man.
Wow.
I'm sweating over here.
I'm sweating too. Let's get to the final question. Number 10, who invented the diving headbutt move from the top rope?
Oh, y'all, one of y'all better know this.
Brand.
Brand.
I'm going to go with Harley Race.
And Harley Race is correct. We have a brand new champion, the Brand. You've got to be kidding me.
Brand new champion, the Brand.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
the biggest upset in the history of trivia challenge.
Now, wait a second. Is that an upset?
Hold on.
The Brand, Brandon Craig, had no chance at all of beating the Mighty Blitz Forrester, and he takes him down on his birthday.
Oh, hold on, gentlemen.
I am stunned. Completely stunned.
I believe
stunned.
In him.
Blitz, Brand, I was going for you this time.
Brand,
hold
what
on.
Do you have to say? Hang on, everybody. We can't all talk at once. Brand, you are the new champion. What do you have to say?
Duh. Of course I'm the champion. The best there is. I've been trained by the best. I am the best. I eat, sleep, and breathe the best.
That's right. My...
I will remain undefeated for till the day I am done.
Master?
Now that is true. My son wakes up and pisses excellence.
Oh.
And we have to talk to the former champion, Blitz Forcer. Sean, what happened?
Hold on. I'm going to say two things.
Please.
That's too many.
Let's be a good sport now.
Hang on.
Number
talk
one.
With, please.
Number one, congratulations, Brandon. Congratulations. Number two, I know for a fact, twice, I called Blitz first, including that last question. And I
there's
was,
no
and that
way
last
you
question,
called.
I,
there's
that
no
last
way
question,
you did.
I yelled Blitz. I yelled it.
You did not.
No, hang on.
I'll tell you what.
What are you saying, Sean?
When this show is over, we will have it played back. And it will be clear proof on whether or not I yelled first.
Yes, we'll play it back for sure.
You can do that?
Playing it back.
That's
and the results will be announced.
Of course, it's archived, Mojo. You can listen to it whenever you want to.
Oh, yeah. Duh. Okay.
Duh.
But next week, Brandon Craig, you better be ready.
Yeah, Brandon, who are you going to take on?
Me. Because I'm cashing in.
That was for you, Mojo, by the way.
Hey, Blitz, you mind if I co-sign and be your manager so it can be even?
By all means,
manager.
All right, so the match is going to be signed for next week. The Brand, the Brand new champion, the Brand, Brandon Craig, will be defending his newly won PWO World Wrestling Trivia Championship against the challenger, Sean Blitz Forrester.
Now hold on just a minute. This guy's not in my league.
That's right.
Brandon, you only won 6-4. Good grief, it's not like you onslaughted him or anything.
Who said he gets a rematch? We're already done with him. We're going on to bigger, better opponents.
What?
Now, Blitz Forrester has a mandatory rematch in a clause in his contract.
Oh, he does.
Blitz Forrester, am I understanding, Blitz Forrester, that you are going to take that up for next week?
Yeah, next week.
That's what I thought. Next week. All right. The biggest upset in the history of trivia has just occurred. Unfortunately, we must move on. Time is now of the essence. Anybody wants to stick on, by all means, do so. We're moving on to the think tank, where it is time to talk about a particular topic and get everybody's opinions and thoughts and all that good stuff. But first, let us also let you know that we are Pro Wrestling Obsession Live. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Obsession. And Sean Blitzforcer is in the midst of working on getting us a Twitter account going. Hopefully he'll get that up soon for us too, and we'll get that to you when it happens. Think Tank question for the night. Obviously, when promoters are looking around and see success from other promotions, they feel an obligation at times to cash in on that particular promotion and what they're trying to do. Some people see it as gimmick infringement. That's pretty much how I see it. But they want to cash in on that popularity as well. Let's go around the horn. Let's talk about gimmick infringement that has outright embarrassed you to no end just to even see it happen. What's the worst form of gimmick infringement you've ever seen? Bo Johnson, I haven't heard from you since the beginning of the show. You lead it off, my friend.
Well, it's about damn time I get my voice back on my show here.
Exactly. I was beginning to worry about you.
So there's, you know, the whole issue with gimmick infringement and all that. And we have, I mean, the one biggest one that comes to my mind is Arachna Man. Which, just, you know, obviously besides the minus, or the yellow and blue color scheme, was probably the most, was probably the worst infringement on Trey Park.
And who did
in terms of rest?
Go ahead, Bo, I'm sorry.
Oh, in terms of wrestling infringement, the recent, kind
that's
of
where I'm getting at.
TNA.
Wrestling infringement, stealing from other promotions.
Recently with WWE and TNA stealing from each other, Claire Lynch from TNA, and then WWE kind of stealing elements and aspects from that gimmick and not successfully doing it either. With I believe it was Cena and AJ.
Correct. Very good, Bo. Very good. Let's move over to the Mojo, Miss Mojo. Ms. Mojo Ashley Farmer.
Well, this is from a Lucha Libre perspective. A lot of luchadors, a lot of the, I guess you could say, Titas out there are obviously the ones that have the chicks and whatnot. And I think the biggest gimmick infringement I would have to believe is between, call me a Jomo hater, but John Morrison and the Cowboys in Lucha Libre. I only say that because these wrestlers like Alan Stone and Ento Cable, they're the ones that came out with the fur to the ring, the fur coats, you know, showing off their abs, lots of athletic ability. And then you see a guy like John Morrison, and you're just like, why have I seen this before? And it's just like, oh, it clicked. Like, he's trying to be the ladies' man. And oddly enough, I don't think that worked in his favor. That's how
Very nice. Very nice. Brand new champion, the brand. Gimmick infringement. What are you thinking?
Well, I got to say, one, I agree with the John Cena and AJ. Terrible. Both parts, really.
Let's move on to Sean Blitz Forrester. What do you got, Sean?
Arachna Man.
Well, hang on. Before we start, continue with Arachna Man, who is Arachna Man ripping off?
Who's Arachna Man?
He's Brad Armstrong under a mask in
right.
WCW. So who is he ripping off besides Spider-Man? But we're not talking about that. We're talking about ripping off other promotions.
Well, then in that case, since we can say that probably the worst was Renegade ripping off the Ultimate Warrior.
Very good, Sean. Very good. Very good. Let's move over to the master himself. Brian Craig, what gimmick infringement made you ill?
Well, I kind of got two.
Please.
And one of them was Shark Boy. Wasn't he that did Austin?
Yeah, Stone Cold Shark Boy.
Okay.
And then Jay Lethal. And his Andre and impressions. Well as he does an impression, come on now, you know.
Do your own thing, right?
You're not going to be Macho Man, I'm sorry. Yes, do your own thing.
All right, we're getting close to wrapping this segment up, so let me throw in my two cents to this. I actually had four of them. Sean Blitz Forrester took one of my four by taking the ultimate.
Oh, I thought he was the one.
Sean Blitz Forrester brought up the Renegade and the Ultimate Warrior, which was an obviously blatant ripoff. WCW desperately trying to get their name on the board. The Warrior was in the midst of this complete success over in WWF at the time, and the Renegade
and
fell flat
miserably
on his face. It did not work. People booed him like crazy. It was just a disaster. How about this one, Sean? How about Nord the Barbarian as a blatant ripoff of Bruiser Brody?
Then we have to... that was bad.
I mean, can you remember Nord the Barbarian? If those who don't know who Nord the Barbarian is, he is the Berserker in the WWF, the Berserker. But he used to run around wrestling rinks. He even did it as the Berserker. He did it in AWA with his hand out, huss, 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 just like Bruiser Brody used to do. Ripoff. Sickening ripoff. My next one actually had two ripoffs. How about the Road Warriors and their ripoffs, Demolition and the Powers of Pain?
Oh, my gosh. Why didn't I think of that one?
I don't know why, Ashley, because you're not me. That's why. I'm the prophet and you're not. That's why.
Whatever.
Okay, I'll give you Powers of Pain.
No, I know. Whoa. Hang on. Let me finish. This is my time. Okay?
Right.
The Road Warriors, incredible success story, barnstorming NWA at the time. WWF, desperately trying to come up with their own Road Warriors because they were having difficulty prying them away from the NWA. So Vince had this crazy notion, we'll create our own Road Warriors. And he did, Demolition, which was, as much as the team was successful, they did get over because a lot of people at the time hadn't seen the Road Warriors because of they weren't as popular in the NWA as the WWF was receiving television-wise, obviously. And so Demolition was seen by a brand-new audience, and that was that. The Road Warriors were seen as imitators when they came in eventually. Then NWA/WCW comes up with their own imitations of the Road Warriors to feud with them. That would be the Powers of Pain.
That was
an interesting feud that... Ended up with the Powers, the Barbarian, and the Warlord being afraid to compete in scaffold matches with the Road Warriors, so they hightailed it to the WWF, and that was it, only to be followed by them, the Road Warriors, shortly thereafter. My final pick for ripoff, and people are going to get irritated with me for this one. Are you ready, Ashley?
Yep.
Bo, are you ready?
Yep.
Are you awake, Bo?
Yes, I'm awake.
I don't think you're awake. Hang on.
Hey! Ow!
All right, wake up.
Ow!
My last blatant ripoff, and this bothered me to no end in the 80s, is when the Midnight Rockers of Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty came up in the AWA and blatantly ripped off the Rock and Roll Expressive Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. Complete ripoff.
I always thought that was coincidental.
That was not coincidental. The Rock and Roll Express were one of the most popular tag teams in the world. AWA sagging in the ratings, trying to keep up with these two promotions of the WWF and the NWA. They came up with their own. And it was just a – they got over as well. Obviously, they moved on to bigger and better things as the Rockers and the WWF, but they started off as a blatant ripoff.
Yeah.
All right, it's time to move on. Ah, man. That was tough. If I can find it, there we go. For WWE discussion. Now, due to the length of interview time that we had, we've got to cut our segments a little short here with our WWE segment. We only have 10 minutes on the clock instead of our usual 15 to make sure we get everything else in before the end. So let's get to a really good topic of the WWE for this week. Sean Forster, what are we going to talk about?
With WWE?
Yes,
all
sir.
Right. I
Make
want to
good.
Talk about Damian Sandow being Mr. Money in the Bank.
Exactly. That's a beautiful topic to talk about. Go ahead and lead us.
I'm going to say this. I was very concerned because I have a feeling that Sandow is going to get a swagger-type reign, given that how much he got fed to Sheamus beforehand. But my prediction may have been a little late, but I called Sandow being a main eventer. And now he's getting his chance. Go.
So you definitely love this decision, right?
Yes, I love it.
Okay. How about you, Master Brian Craig? What did you think of Damian Sandow winning the ladder match for the...
Well, it's just like your interview you
World
had
title.
There. It's just like your interview with the before we are talking now. Is that, you know, they've got to start pushing some of these other wrestlers. I mean, these guys are that they're hanging on to in these leagues now are in their mid-30s, all the way up to 50 years old now. It's time to bring these guys, you know, under 30 years old and move them up. So I'm glad Damian's in there. I would have liked to have seen Dustin, but Damian works for me as well.
Dustin? Gold Dust does not work.
I'm sorry, I did not. I said Dustin. No, brother.
Hey, Master.
Oh.
All right, jeez. Bowmeister.
I have to agree with Blitz. We're not going to see a very great run out of Sandow this first time, but if he makes the most of it, I can see him being in the main event for years to come. I mean, come on. I'm going to, even though Ziggler did not win, or yeah, he did use it, but he was gone for most of it because of his concussion. You know, I could see something, I mean, Sandow having an underwhelming reign, a couple of defenses here and there that were too exciting, but it would keep him in the main event picture.
Brandon.
Well, you know, several really talent that could have moved up there to the higher rank. You know, you had Swagger or I was actually hoping Cody Rhodes, and I not bet on the fact that I think he will take that case from Sandow. But also you had Antonio Cesaro. Cesaro is another guy that I would rank up there as the top guy that they should be pushing. But I thought it was great. They had a lot of young talent in there. I agree with you.
Mojo.
I just want to say I didn't expect Sandow to win.
You did not.
I did not. I did not see that coming.
Okay. So what are your thoughts now that it has happened?
I hope WWE doesn't mess up with him.
Yep.
I hope that he gets the right amount of time. If he cashes in, I hope he gets the right amount of time of holding the title.
Now it's time for my take on it. As everyone on this panel and everyone at home who listened to the show last week, I called for Cody Rhodes to win this. I pretty much laid out how Cody Rhodes was going to win it, but I got the name wrong. Damian was the one who did the turn and one who screwed his partner over on the ladder. So I was 50% right. So we'll leave it at that. We've got a few more minutes. We can jump on to one more WWE topic. Bo Meister, what topic shall we talk about this time?
Well, let's go with everyone's thoughts on Bray Wyatt.
You know what, Bo?
We're
going to squash it because I think we're going to need more time for our next conversation. As much as I would love to talk about Bray Wyatt, and I know my brother is bored to no end already with Bray Wyatt, I think we're going to need more time to talk about TNA this week. So let's move on to the next segment here because we want to make sure we have enough time for back in time to finish out the show tonight. So without further ado... Time to talk TNA with the recent show of Destination X actually being live and free on our television sets here for this last Thursday show. I think we've got some talking about to do with TNA wrestling. And the first topic is going to be the most obvious topic is Chris Sabin winning the world championship away from Bully Ray. Let's get to Miss Mojo first.
Called it.
You did call it, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And now that it's happened, what's your thoughts?
Well, I was a little skeptical at first when I said that Sabin was going to win the title. I don't think that he's ready to become world champion, but just by basing it off the fact of the people that have cashed in the title, like Austin Aries, he cashed in and became world champion. I based my decision off of that. And turns out
made your decision, Ashley. Hang on a second. You made your decision off of the fact that it's happened once before because it's only been one other time.
Yes. But I'm happy for
so that's a real precedent there, right?
Yes.
Make your decision because Austin Aries, the only person who's done this before, happened to be the winner last year, then that means it's got to happen again the next year. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Ashley, assume the position.
No.
Okay.
Wait a second. No. I totally agree with her. I 1,000% agree with her.
Hush. We don't interfere with the prophet. Hold still, Brian.
Ow.
Yeah. So because Austin Aries won the title last year, that means Chris Sabin's going to win it this year. We're going off the precedence of what happened in the history of this event, and there's only been one. Master.
I could see I seen it happening. I mean, otherwise, what was the purpose of the match to begin with?
Did you see it happening because Austin Aries won it last year? That's my question.
Absolutely.
Did you base that decision because Austin won it last year? That means Chris has to win it this year.
Has to. Otherwise, this whole thing is worthless. And why have the match? If you're TNA, think about it. Why even run this match, period, unless he's going to win? It serves no purpose for the league. Nothing.
Let's move on to
the
Bo Meister.
The whole match is an oddball match anyway.
It's Bo Meister's turn. Bo.
I agree with Mojo. I saw Sabin winning it just in the sole fact that TNA has to accept this precedent of Dick Division Champion going over, at least for now. Maybe next year, a couple years, if they keep this up with, you know, the Destination X World Championship match, that they have, you know, yeah, I can see the champion losing down the line, Dick Division Champion losing down the line. But for now, they have to set that up, so it would be it would mean more when the X Division Champion loses.
So it's got the same impact as the Money in the Bank briefcase, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Similar.
Okay. All right, let's move on, guys. We're running out of time. Brandon, your thoughts?
Terrible decision, first of all. I mean, I'm a fan of Chris Sabin. Well, I'm a fan of Chris Sabin. I loved him with the Motor City Machine Gun. One of my all-time favorite tag teams as well. But, I mean, he has, to me, he doesn't have a personality. He's been there. Well, he's not a fresh face. He's been there. He's been there off and on. I mean, I've been watching TNA since before it was even televised, and I can't even really tell you as much about the guy. I mean, it was just a terrible decision. But he's probably one of the best heels of this era, in my opinion. I mean, it doesn't do anything for me. I think it's just a terrible decision.
What's Forrester?
I'm not even sure what to think about it, but I will say this, that it doesn't necessarily mean that Sabin had, because they could have easily pulled a dirty finish out of it. Well, they did, actually. But it could have been a dirty finish with Bully Ray when he could still bounce Roy. With that said, just like John Cena failing to cash in his Money in the Bank case for a successful title win, this option C is TNA's version of Money in the Bank, and I guarantee you next year, if TNA is even in business, the winner, the person cashing in that X Division title or world title shot, will not win. I'm saying a year in advance.
Regardless of who wins. Okay. Now, let me get the final thought here for myself. Yes, I saw Chris Sabin winning this match, but I am 100% agreeing with the brand. Why Chris Sabin? What in the world has he done to deserve being in the spotlight right now, after being away for 2 years? His character has not developed whatsoever. He's been around for 10 years in TNA, 13 years, or whatever the heck they keep saying it was, 10 years. Why Chris Sabin? Did they negotiate something in the man's contract to where he gets an X Division title twice and a world title within 1 month after being back? This is insane. I've never seen a push like this out of nowhere for no reason. Two X Division titles and now a world title in less than a month after his return. Why? Why Chris Sabin? Yes, the man is a phenomenal wrestler. His promos are getting better. He's nowhere near main event status yet, not even close. His character's not developed whatsoever. As Ashley says, he's not ready for it yet on being on that big of a stage. We haven't got to know Chris Sabin in the 10 years he's been in TNA. Why now? It remains to be seen what the purpose of this monstrosity of a push for Chris Sabin is and why it came. I'd be interested to hear the backstage news on this. All right, let's move on to our final segment of the evening, and that is Back in Time, where we go back to this week in the history of professional wrestling of years gone by, where the Blitz, Sean Forrester, and the Lord Bowmeister himself, Bo Johnson, will throw various facts of what happened this week in wrestling history, and I get the pleasure of hitting them with an object of my choice on who didn't do as well. Bowmeister, would you like to lead off the festivities?
Okay. July 15th, 2006, Brock Lesnar is stripped of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship after having a disagreement with New Japan Pro Wrestling Management.
Very nice. Sean?
What a big baby.
I'm going straight to the throat. July 19, 1948. The current version of the National Wrestling Alliance is formed in Waterloo, Iowa. The first president, E.L. George, and Orville Brown, who was the Midwest Wrestling Association champion at the time, is recognized as the first NWA World Champion.
Sean, you're breaking up a little bit. Who was recognized?
Orville Brown.
I still didn't get that name. Who was it?
Orville Brown.
Orville Brown?
Uh-huh.
Interesting. I'm going to have to have Mr. Bo stand still for a second.
Ow! What was that?
That was you being thrown into trash cans.
Okay. Ow.
All right, Sean Forrester, lead us off for the next round.
July 16th, 1988, Bruiser Brody is stabbed to death in the showers in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Invader 1, Jose Gonzalez, was charged for the quitting.
That was unintentional, guys. Sorry about that.
No.
That was not intended to be run tonight, I promise. My finger accidentally touched it. Sorry, guys. Oh, my goodness. Sorry you have to follow that one up, though.
I know. So I'm just going to go with July 18th, 2007. John Cronus passed away at the age of 38.
Who did?
Ready. John Cronus.
Oh, John Cronus did. Oh, Blitz. I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, you always got to side with yes in these kind of situations.
All right, Bo, what you got?
Okay, July 15th, 1995, Tiger Mask the Fourth made his debut.
Very nice. Flip?
July 18th, 1916, Frank Gotch in Kenosha, Wisconsin, against Bob Mangold Sr. This would be Gotch's very last match.
Bo, I hate to do this to you again, buddy. You're being pummeled. Sean.
Yeah.
All right. July 20th, 1878, George, the Russian Lion Hackenschmidt, was born in Dorpat, Russia.
Oh, he pulls out the Hockenschmidt on us. Bo, how are you going to follow that one up, sir?
June 15th, 1960, the American Wrestling Association out of Boston closes its doors after 38 years of operation.
Ooh.
We really need to think about this one.
Not Bo. Much time to think about it, Rick.
Bo. I'm having trouble with this laptop. You like
boo.
It from the first time, I gave you another one. George Hockenschmidt, man, that's legendary stuff.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going with the Blitz on that one, even though Bo had a decent one. Bo, come on. Come back.
All right, July 17th, 2007, Edge was stripped of the World Heavyweight Championship after being injured the week prior. WWE held a Battle Royal later that night in which Great Khali won the World Heavyweight Championship, last eliminating Batista and Kane.
Not a strike you just for mentioning his name. Go ahead, Bliss.
All right. Well, this one should be easy. This one should be an easy one. July 22nd, 1960, Danny Hodge wins his first of seven NWA World Junior Heavyweight titles in Oklahoma City by dropping Angelo Savoldi, who you should know as the grandfather of Jumping Joe Savoldi and promoter of International Championship Wrestling.
Isn't July 22nd next week?
Yeah, it's a foul.
Oh, it is a foul. Master,
okay.
You just got Blitz Forrester clobbered.
Ouch.
Look at that. You tried to pull a fast one on us tonight, didn't you, Blitz Forrester? You're just not having a very good night, Sean. Yes, you did. Boy, Bo, look what he's trying to do to you. He's pulling the cheats out to try to take you out. Okay, Blitz, go.
All right. Hang on, let me get myself straight after that. July 15th, 1967, in a WWF World versus U.S. title match, U.S. champion Ray Stevens defeats Bruno Sammartino by countout after hitting a vicious bombs away diving knee drop. Stevens claims the WWF title, but the rules state that titles cannot change hands via countout.
Bo, you're going to have a hard time beating this one, my friend. Give it a shot, dude.
July 15th, 2002, on an edition of Monday Night Raw, Eric Bischoff shocks the world and is named Raw General Manager by Vince McMahon himself.
Hey, Bo.
Yeah. All right.
I'm sorry, man. That Blitz Forrester one was really good. All right, let's get close to wrapping up the show. I'm going to give Ashley Mojo Farmer her 2 minutes of fame to talk about the international scene. Go, Ashley.
All right. Well, for right now, Lucha Libre Triple A is holding their show. Also, CMLL is holding their annual Infierno in El Ring, which pretty much the main event from CMLL will be Shocker versus Maximo versus Rush, Glorioso de Plata, Blue Panther, Negro Casas, Rey Bucanero, Miss Aguila, Averno, and Rey Escorpión. And it's going to be a hair versus hair cage match, so the last person that escapes the cage will lose their hair. And currently, with streaming from AATV, Mexican Powers, Abrehi, Atomic Boy, Nino Ambergesa have defeated El Consejo. And currently, the AAA Mixed Tag Team titles are on the line as Halloween and Mario Apache defend against Drago and Fabio Apache. Also, the Black Family will be facing Perros del Mal. And Jellico, Phoenix, Jack Evans will be facing La Parca Negra, Pentagon Jr., and Steve Payne. And also, the return of Cibernetico after losing his hair to Paraguayo will be teaming up with El Macias, as we know as Judas Macias, La Parca, and as they will face Chessman, Paraguayo Jr., and Texano in the main event.
Excellent. You know what? We got a couple minutes to spare. Let's very quickly talk about the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship Tournament. Blitz Forrester.
All right.
They never left.
The first round of the tournament has been announced. And surprisingly, Mark Briscoe is in the as a final participant.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so they never left in the first place. I heard they were given time off or whatever for a new baby. Is that what you heard too, Sean?
I have no clue, but
I had heard that that they had a baby coming to the family and they needed a break.
But here's what we have so far. I'm calling it the first round matchups are as follows. Mark Briscoe versus Adam Cole. Jay Lethal versus Sanjay Dutt, which ought to be a really good one. Tommaso Ciampa, I know I ain't pronouncing that right, versus
Tommaso Ciampa.
Versus either Silas Young or Adam Page. Whoever wins that match. Michael Bennett versus DJ Whitmer. Carl Anderson versus ACH. Paul London versus Michael Elgin. Matt Taven versus Roger Strong, and Brian Kendrick versus Kevin Steen. I'm calling it right now. It's going to be Michael Elgin versus Mark Briscoe in the finals, and Michael Elgin is going to win it all.
Hmm.
I'm calling it right now.
Very interesting. The thing I'm finding interesting about this, Sean, is we saw Sanjay Dutt just advance in the X Division tournament.
And
he's also in the World Tournament for the Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
So what's going to give here, guys? Is Sanjay Dutt going to be a first-round elimination in the ECW so he could advance and become X Division champion? Or is it vice versa? What have you? So who knows? Maybe it's a quick out for both now. Be interesting to see what happens. Just to let people know about Pro Wrestling Obsession, this is our last episode under the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse banner. We will be moving over to a new network on the same Blog Talk Radio system. We'll be with Ringmasters Radio Network beginning next week. And I just want to let everyone know next week's guest is none other than former WWF Women's World and Tag Team Champion and NWA Women's Champion Leilani Kai will be joining us next week here on Pro Wrestling Obsession Live. So that's going to be a major coup. Also letting you know some other guests we got coming up just signed. We'll be seeing B. Brian Blair will be joining us at some point here towards the end of August. And date is not confirmed yet, but Black Jack Mulligan will be joining us on Pro Wrestling Obsession Live in the month of September, we hope. So we got some big guests coming up over the next few weeks. Scott Hudson will be here from WCW announcing. Sonny Ono will be here from WCW announcing. We've got a lot of big guests coming up here over the next few weeks. Hope everybody will continue to join us for Blitz Forrester, for Ashley Mojo Farmer, for the Burmeister. I am the Prophet Rick Craig. For the Craig family, we're out of here. See you next week.
Yeah.